Hi there, you're listening to Camille Parle Sexe, your sexual wellness podcast. I am Camille Bataillon, clinical sexologist, and in this podcast, I want to give you la crème de la crème in sexology. With my guest or on my own, we will reflect together on sexuality, human relationship, and every aspect of intimacy to give you the best of sex education. I hope to inspire you in your intimacy and put some glitter in your sexuality. Alors, bienvenue! Hello you, welcome for a new episode on Camille Parle Sexe. Today, my guest is Megan Lambert. She is a Master Certified Intimacy Expert, best-selling author, and international retreat facilitator. She specializes in helping couples keep the spark alive for the long term, and women rediscover their desires and reclaim their feminine energy. I met Megan during a coaching program in California in 2016. And you know, I have to tell you that when I saw her and talked to her, I thought we had a lot in common. And still today, when I'm following her on Instagram, seeing her professional life or personal life, I recognize myself a lot in her. I love what she shares, her reflections, which sometimes are very similar to mine. In this episode, we're going to talk about long-term couples, how you can keep the spark alive, why the spark dies, what are some common challenges couples face in maintaining sexual intimacy after having children? So we're going to talk also about parenthood, motherhood, how motherhood impacts her sex life, my sex life, the sex life of our clients. She's going to give you tips and advice to keep the spark alive even after having kids. So please enjoy the show. Megan, bienvenue sur Camille Parle Sexe.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much. So Megan, can you tell us where do you live and how's your day as a sex expert look like?
Oh, great question. Well, I live in Bali. I'm originally from California, the US, but right now I live in Bali. And my day, what does it look like? I wake up, I do my own morning practice. I have a love date with my husband where we practice sacred sexuality.
Every day?
Monday through Friday. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I have client calls in the morning while my little one is in school. And then in the afternoons, I play with her, swim in the pool, hang out in the garden, and in the evenings do something social with friends. So that's like a little snapshot of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because probably there's no day that looks like each other, you know, especially with a little one and especially in your field as well, where you can just, you know, do so many different things, right? You can do your own schedule. And when I see what you're doing on Instagram is you have a lot of social life, you know, heaven, seeing friends, doing your practice with your husband, with your friends. So it's an inspiration. So thank you for this.
Thank you. It's important to me that I keep all these different aspects of my life alive.
And so you wrote an ebook with your husband, James, which we can see him a lot on your Instagram as well. And the ebook, it's called Why the Spark Dies. I would like we focus our conversation about this topic related to relationship and parenthood. So my first question is, you know, we often describe long-term relationship as couples who are sexless, passionless, that they have no more fun anymore, that they are just a boring couple, right? With no more sensuality. It just feels like the spark dies. Why is it so common around long-term couples to see that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a few reasons. So one is, and this comes from Esther Perel's book, Mating in Captivity. You may have heard it or talked about it on the podcast.
Of course.
Yeah, but I would love
to have her.
Right? Future dreams. She really beautifully describes how we have these competing needs in relationship. One for coziness, familiarity. I want to know everything about you. And the other for mystery and novelty and the unknown. And that the second one is where desire arises. Because I don't yet know you. I want to bridge the gap. But what happens in long-term love is people start to develop patterns and habits, and they start to assume that they know everything about each other, and every day looks like this, and we always go to this restaurant, and I always order the chicken cordon bleu, and you know, and there's just these habits, and those habits deaden the spark and the unknown because there isn't mystery. There isn't that novelty. So that's one of the reasons I think that the spark dies. There's
a
few.
Point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with that, we start to lose curiosity about who our partner is, right? Because in the beginning, it's like, who are you? What do you like? Tell me about you. How do you like to be kissed? What's your dream vacation? Over time, it's like, oh yeah, hey you, I know you, you know? And so there's, we can often not be as curious and not as present with each other as we were in the beginning. And presence is really the birthplace of the spark. It's like, I'm right here, body to body, breath to breath with you. And that's nice. Where the spark starts.
When you were sharing this, I just had in my mind a thought of, you know, often in sessions, women are saying they want novelty, they want like the sensuality, they want to feel like, oh, I feel desire by my partner. And sometimes they just feel like, oh, he's boring. He's always doing the same thing, you know. I know exactly he's going to touch me there just because he wants sex. And they would like to have novelty, right? So I know you were saying a few other points, but I don't know what you would like to say about this as well. And if it's something that you hear from your female clients.
Yeah, I hear it all the time from female clients. And I think it describes one of the inherent gifts of the masculine and the feminine. So we all have both masculine and feminine energy inside of us. But in a heterosexual relationship, if she has more of the feminine, he has more of the masculine. The masculine likes to figure out systems and then just rinse and repeat or do it like that every time. It's like, okay, I figured out the game and I'm just going to repeat it for maximum efficiency. Right? It makes sense. And the masculine brain is always thinking, how do I get the optimal result with the least amount of effort?
Whereas as a woman, we feel it. We feel like there's a less effort and they don't like that, you know, because they're like, at the beginning of relationship, it was making a lot of effort. I want a man to make efforts for me because it brings me like the values that I'm worth it to fight for.
Kind of. Yeah, totally. And I think one of the feminine longings is to be continually unraveling new layers and new experiences and evolving together. And the feminine in men, women, non-binary holds the desire. And the desire is like this constant invitation to keep exploring the unknown together. Mm-hmm. So whoever is playing the feminine role, that is the gift that they bring into the intimate relationship, is that like, ooh, I want this, or I want to try this, or could we do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said, it's a superpower, right? As a feminine energy. But you need also a cooperation with the other one. So sometimes I also feel like for women, they have to do all the work. And especially they also have the charge mentale, like they have to do everything at home, the lot of tasks. And plus they have to keep the spark alive. You know, they're the one going into therapy. They're the one buying books to keep the sparks alive. And do you know a trick in order to make it less effort for those women and maybe to bring the men more into this motivation or mindset about novelty and relationship?
Yeah, I have two thoughts. So one is embracing, like, the feminine role is being the leader in love. So she is the one that is acutely aware of the texture of the relationship right now. How are we doing? She is probably the one that has, or whoever is the feminine, the most accurate pulse on the relationship. And that's, so just being like, okay, I'm a leader in love. That's really important. But if you want your partner to show up more, to step up more, I would say look at all the ways they already are stepping up and they're already leading, and bring appreciation and joy into that. Mm-hmm. Because what men often feel from their partners is kind of like, you're never doing enough, right? Which makes them feel like, well, I don't want to do anything, right? Like, I do a little bit, it's unrecognized, so now I'm not going to do anything. Mm. Whereas if he does a little bit, say, you know, let's try this new sex position, or brings you home a flower, can you be like, oh, I love that. Thank you. I feel so loved. And really let it touch you and let the joy of it be shared, because that encourages him to do more.
Well, makes sense. Yes. So to recognize and to validate what the other one is doing, because maybe the other one is showing the love in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I am one of my mentors that I loved. She said, we're all chasing polarity, right? Like, I want more passion, more attraction. But what we don't see is all the places we're blocking it and we're killing the passion. And the places we kill the passion are where we emasculate our men, don't believe in their leadership, second guess it, don't receive the gifts they want to give. These are things that are killing the passion.
Wow. And it's easy to fall in this trap. I recognize myself a bit like this lastly, like I'm a bit like that, and I'm trying to be conscious to not fall, you know, not fall into this trap, but it's so easy to fall into this. I don't know why.
It's so true. I know. Well, me too. And I think it's easier because it's less vulnerable. You know, it's a protective mechanism of blaming, criticizing, nagging. You're not doing enough. If only you read that book, if only you started working on it. It's like, it's a way we close our hearts and don't have to be vulnerable.
Wow. Interesting. So one of the solutions for us or for people who are like recognizing themselves into this pattern is to be more vulnerable, to express a desire. I remember you wrote a post on a story which was saying, behind every criticism, veil a desire, something like this.
Yes, behind every criticism, there is a desire. I think this is one of the most important axioms for a couple to know, because often the feminine partner will come saying things like, we never spend time together. You're not prioritizing me. You're always so busy. And that can put their partner on the back foot and make them feel really defensive. But if you can keep in mind, okay, beneath every criticism, there's a desire. And see, can I see below the criticism to the tender yearning? That's a superpower. So in that example, it's like she wants to feel like a priority. She wants to know that she matters to you. She wants to feel special. Right? And that's something you can work with.
Yeah, so instead of saying, you didn't throw the trash, it's like, I want a hug from you.
Yeah. Or I want to know that you see how hard I'm working, and I want to know I have a teammate in taking care of the house.
Nice. So, well, why did you write any book about this topic? You know, it should have been the first questions almost.
I wrote it because I think it's such a mystery to so many people, and myself included. It's like this mystery with so many layers, and every year I've been studying this exact question for like 5 years. Every year I'm discovering new layers to it. And I'm so curious, how do you keep the spark in long-term love? Because personally, I want a lifelong marriage, but I also want passion and excitement and desire and to be ravished. And like, I don't want to believe that it's one or the other. And so I'm researching, how do you have that?
And do you believe it could be this with the same person, the passion? Because I feel like a lot of couples, they are wondering, and they're even saying it's impossible to have this passion with the same person for the rest of our life.
I absolutely believe it's possible. I do believe it takes a lot of work. So I've seen examples of couples that have been together for decades that are on this path, that learn a lot about relationship and sacred sexuality, and they still have a thriving, passionate partnership. And when I see these examples are rare, but they exist. And because they exist, I know it's possible.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are the differences between those couples and the one where like passion is dead and, you know, we should see other people and have sex with other people? Doesn't mean it's a judgment, right? People can have open relationship and it works well, but more like what do you see? Yeah, what can make the difference?
Yeah, I think a few things. One is being honest with each other about how things are feeling. I see a lot of times with couples that have been together for many years, they start to sweep things under the rug, not say uncomfortable truths, not admit secret desires, not say that when they got their feelings hurt. So the first step is being honest and keeping the connection between you two clear of resentment and unspoken hurts. Mm-hmm. That's probably the number one. The second one, and this builds on it, is when the connection is clear, to make a safe space for desire, for both of you to express what you want to explore and try next. And this brings the novelty and the excitement. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is devotion to each other and to your intimacy as a practice. So I talk about intimacy as a practice because just like if you want to get really good at yoga, right? You wouldn't just hope to get good at yoga or like, oh, if the mat happens to be there, I'll do a couple poses. No,
it doesn't work like that.
Right? You like set aside time. You learn how to do the poses and you do yoga. And it's the same with intimacy and sexuality, is like seeing it as something to practice and learn, and that there's a whole world of erotic arts that you two can cultivate together. And I think those three things are really what helps couples. So honesty, intimacy as a practice, and space for desire.
Yes. Wow. And when you say those three things, I can already, you know, see that for so many couples, it's very difficult, right? So they really have to practice seeing coach or therapist to build these kind of things as well, like the safe space, being able to have a clear communication and effective communication, you know, and be able also to have the devotion as a couple.
Yeah, it is by no means easy, especially if your blueprint of relationship is challenged, or you have childhood, you know, all your needs weren't met in childhood, which is true for most people. So it can be, there's a lot to learn here and a lot to heal and reveal and explore.
So also you are a mom.
Yes.
And I wanted to know, because this is a topic that, you know, when we discuss about like doing this podcast, you were like, I want also to talk about this, to motherhood. And I think there's a big link between, you know, parenthood and keeping the spark alive, because you were saying it's asking a lot of effort. It's challenging to keep the spark alive, but I think it's double challenge when you're also a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think whatever your intimacy was like before having a baby, it's like three times as hard after having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great foundation before you have your baby, but not to say you can't after a baby. It's just a lot more challenging.
Yeah, it's challenging. And even with a great foundation, as you were saying, I'm like, wow, this is hard. So I can't even imagine with couple, which are the majority, not having a great foundation.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for a few reasons. And I'd love to hear your take on it too. But
yes.
I think one is like all of a sudden, at least for me and becoming a mom, my baby's a year and a half. My attention is no longer on me and my body and how I feel and what I need. It's now on this baby and what this baby needs and wants. And to really drop into pleasure and sensuality, I have to take my attention off of my baby, put it back on myself and my body. And that can be really difficult. So it's partly a time and space thing, right? Do you have support with the baby? Do you have time away from your baby? But it's also an energetic shift. And so I hear a lot from moms, they almost get stuck in mothering and can't come back to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one challenge. A couple other things that come up. One is her body changes dramatically through pregnancy, birth, postpartum.
Breastfeeding.
Body image, breastfeeding, body image can be a huge thing. Like, how do I look? What is this body? I have rolls and wrinkles and stretch marks in places I didn't. It can have a huge impact on if she feels sexy or not. And then if she's, you know, breastfeeding or even just carrying her baby all day long, her body can feel like it's not hers, you know, like someone else is pulling on her all day. And so then when her partner comes up and wants to initiate intimacy, it can feel like, oh, I don't have more to give you. I don't have more to give you.
Because they can't give to the other one if they can't feel their own needs and desires, you were saying, like reconnecting to their bodies first.
Right.
I like this as well. It's a midwife who shares that. But she was saying, like, after birth, there's usually three phases that a woman faces, which can last depending on people. But the first phase is focus on the baby, the newborn, you know, like your priority is a baby. So you are 100% on the baby. And for some women, it's a few weeks, some women months, years, depending, right? Then there's a phase two, which is focusing on yourself. You know, maybe you go back to work or you have time for taking care of your body or whatever, doing some things that really nourish you. And then you can think about the phase three, which is more like meeting the other one, meeting your partner. And usually when people come to sessions, they are wandering into this phase three, like, oh, I can't connect to him anymore. Oh, we can't connect. We don't understand each other. And usually I'm asking about the phase two. Do you have time for yourself? You know, can you have a space, you know, physical space, but also psychological space for yourself? And usually the answer is no. So we have to work on this first.
Yeah, I love that distinction of like baby, me, partner. It's a really beautiful way, because I think when I became a mother, it's like juggling all these three people's needs and desires constantly, and how to not let any of them drop too completely.
Yes. And you're right. It's not necessarily linear. It could be maybe right after postpartum, but then it's all along our life. We need to, you know, kind of, yeah, jungle with the three, you know, because of course the three are the priority, yourself, with your partner, and with your babies or kids, you know. So, and it's not easy. And in my own experience, I felt it was maybe easier at the beginning. It's funny, because I felt it was very easy at the beginning and maybe harder when I start working, or maybe now after a year. Like, I remember the 1 week after giving birth, after a long sleep, you know, my husband told me, you are exhausted, so now you sleep as much as you can, you know. And so I slept, and after 3 days, I just felt myself again. And I felt as sexier as never, you know, and I was like, what? Nobody told me that in postpartum you could feel that way. Yeah. And I felt amazing. I was super happy, even with my belly was still, you know, a bit big, but I felt amazing. I took time to take care of my body, because also I had a partner. But then when I started working, it was more difficult it was challenging to make time also for yourself, for your partner. And when you have a big stress event in your life as a moving, you know, it's also difficult. Yeah. So we're always going to face challenge. If we are waiting for having time, having the space, it's not going to happen. We need to make that time and that space.
Yeah, it's so true. I love that. I love that you felt sexy right after having a baby. And I also, it's funny, felt like pretty sexy and like attractive, and I don't think that's a usual experience, but it's something that I almost felt embarrassed to say, because I didn't want to
shame as well.
I didn't want anyone to feel like, oh well, I'm not having that experience, I don't feel good reading this. So it's funny, I didn't want to say it. Yeah, our passion is still here.
Yeah, I the same. I'm feeling shameful sometimes to say that, and especially, you know, I wrote a book about this topic, and what I describe in the book is what most of the women experiences, even though we're all unique, but sometimes just sharing the theory, where me in practice, I'm like, but this is not like breastfeeding, you know, I've been breastfeeding for 10 months, and you are breastfeeding as well, right? Or you were breastfeeding, so.
Still.
But I never felt overwhelmed, I never, you know, I just felt, yeah, it's my body still. So I think it's great to put some nuance and to show that anything is possible, right? And it can also be very reassuring for a woman to hear that actually you can still feel sexy and powerful and pretty. But it can also be challenging for some women, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I just remember intimacy after baby, after Lila, my daughter, was born. I almost felt virginal. In a way, like it was like rediscovering my body. And, you know, as everything was healing down there, we would just like kiss. And so it was like just kissing. And then it was like just kissing and breasts. And so it kind of progressed almost like the first time. And I didn't expect that, but it also was so emotional for me. And I've heard this a lot from other moms that I work with, is that it can be so emotional to let your partner back into your body after giving birth. Because now it's a whole new body, it's a whole new pussy,
and it's a different experience, and you integrate a different experience, really. And and for me as well, it took me some time. My desire was there, but I knew I was not physically ready. And then I was ready for penetrative sex, for example. It was painful, you know, for the first time in my life, I experienced also painful sex, which I know it can be, you know, something that for a lot of women, they experience it, and they can experience also for the first time in postpartum. So I was happy to have tools to heal myself, which was possible, but it gave me also the insights of, oh, wow, this pain is horrible, and I understand, and I have even more compassion for the women who are also having painful intercourse.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I am. The first time we had penetration too was painful for me after birth, and we ended up stopping, and I said, I need to stop, and like, we'll come back to this another day, but for now it's too much. And for any woman listening to this, there are two things I would say when you're starting to explore your sexuality after baby is, number one, listen to your body first. Is like, it is the most important time to feel your yes, to feel your no, oh, yes, to speak it, to honor it. Like, your body has been through so much and she deserves the reverence of you listening and speaking what she needs. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is for her partner, that I really think that the partner's focus should be on the mom in those early days and like bringing the mom pleasure and helping her unravel her nervous system and relax because she's doing so much of the tending to the baby. So in those early days, like our intimacy was not equal, so to speak. Like he was definitely doing more massages for me and things for me. But later, as our baby's bigger and I have more capacity, it's kind of balanced out again.
Yes. So. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's good to be aware of this, right? To know that it can't be 50-50. 50-50 doesn't work and we should not aim for this. But it's more like how we can nourish and complement ourselves. And thank you for adding this to our audience. And I would like also to add, like, for if women are experiencing painful sex. And yeah, the same for the first time I experienced this. And I was just crying. I was like, oh, my sex life is over, you know? And I was like, wait a minute, dressing exactly what your clients told you and what you will say to them. You will say, no, it's not, you know, there are solutions and you can heal from this. But I know when you are in this, the pain is so high that you feel like you will never be able to enjoy penetrative sex. And it's not true. You need to have good professionals around you. You should not be ashamed to ask for help because there are solutions. This is my message, you know, and it's not all about penetration neither. You can explore sex in different ways, which can be also very pleasurable.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that.
And so couples often say like they are too tired, you know, they don't have time, especially mm-hmm. after a baby, you know, they don't have time to have sex or to have good quality sex. What are some challenges that couple can face in maintaining like sexual intimacy, especially after having children?
I mean, time and practicalities is a really big thing. So if a couple has a baby, it might be like, when do we make love? Like the baby is with us all the time. And that's a really real challenge. Or if you're busy and working hard or traveling for work, or you can also, I often see couples get into this kind of hamster wheel energy and then don't feel sexy because to feel desire, you have to soften and drop into your body. And pleasure requires a totally different nervous system than the go, 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 do, do, do that you can get into with either work or parenthood. So what I advise couples is to know that if your life is busy and demanding, that you have to consciously carve out time to drop into the other nervous system. So instead of fight or flight sympathetic, dropping into parasympathetic.
How you do that?
Yeah, exactly. So this could look like, if imagine you're a new mom, your baby finally falls asleep for a nap, you're like, thank goodness I have a minute to myself. It could look like taking a long hot shower and like scrubbing your skin as you listen to music and putting on lotion and taking some deep breaths. I called it shower spas. Those were like my favorite in the early days. Mm-hmm. Or if you just got home from a stressful work day, it could look like dancing to a song as you touch your skin. It could look like stopping on your date and instead of talking, just stop and look at each other for a minute and take a few breaths. These little things invite your body to relax into the moment instead of staying in the activity of your brain and like the what's next energy.
I really like also when you were talking about like taking a hot shower, scrubbing, putting music. This is exactly what I did in postpartum. And it was just my moment, you know. It was at 5 p.m. after a long day and I was just waiting to have like 15 minutes on my own, putting music, dancing. And I called it a queen shower.
A queen shower, nice. Shower spa, queen shower, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think I ever loved showers as much as I did as a new mom.
Yeah, because it's sometimes also because it's one of the room in the apartment or the house where you can lock to yourself as well, I think. Yes. I think it makes also the difference.
Yes, and to be alone and to have your own body and nobody's touching you and nobody needs anything. It's just you taking care of yourself and your body. It feels so good.
And how you do when you're in a relationship with someone who has different needs, desire after a baby or without after a baby, like how couples can navigate, you know, different needs and different desires?
Yeah, great question. You know, sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's challenging. On our couples retreat, we have this session called Sexual Alignment. And in this session, we talk about really practical questions like, how often do you want to be having sex? What time of day do you want to have sex? What flavors of intimacy are you craving? And just having the conversation to those questions and opening up about what you each like is so powerful. Because what that will do is it will reveal where you're on the same page and anywhere where you're not yet on the same page. And say you're really on really different pages. Imagine one partner wants to make love every day and one partner is like, I can barely do once a week. Right? So that's a big gap.
Yes, it is.
And without talking about that gap, that can breed a lot of resentment, where the person who wants intimacy every day can feel like, you're not satisfying my needs. I'm not getting what I need from this relationship. Maybe I need to cheat or look at porn or, you know, collapse.
See other partners.
See other partners or feel shame that I want so much intimacy. Like, what's wrong with me? Right? Whereas the partner that only wants intimacy once a week might start to feel pressure or like, oh, I have to do this or I should. It's a chore. Right. So that can create that dynamic. So the question I would ask for each person, for the person who wants it every day, ask, what would it give you? Like, if you were intimate every day, what need would that scratch? What would it have you experience? So it might be stress relief. It might be feeling close to you. It might be finally dropping out of my head and feeling my own body. Okay. And from there, you can have some flexibility in how you get those needs met. And the person who only wants intimacy once a week, we might be like, okay, what is feeling good about this intimacy and what might need to shift so that it's more pleasurable and satisfying for you? And so that it's something that you would be happy to experience more often. Because often if someone has, quote, low libido, it's because they're not really enjoying the sex they're having. So those are a couple of the things I'd look at.
Nice. I really like the questions. And also sometimes when we can ask these kind of questions, people will just say, oh, but because I will be happy if I have sex every day. So I imagine, you know, like you're asking even more questions to go deeper because happy doesn't mean much.
Yeah. Happy is like a state when your needs are met. And what I'm wanting to know is like, what is that need that you're getting met through sex? And what is it giving you?
And so, for example, if it's stress released, then maybe you can propose, okay, masturbation. Or, for example, if it's, oh, I feel connected to my partner. And often it's what men can say. And so it's like, okay, let's experiment other ways also to feel connected to your partner. Because I don't know if you see that, but I feel, and it's because maybe of how we educate men and young boys about education, emotions. But they often have only one way to feel connected to their partner, and it's through penetrative sex. And sometimes the work is to help them to develop other ways to feel connected.
Yeah, it's true. I had a great tantra teacher who said that the way to a man's heart is through his cock, but the way to a woman's pussy is through her heart. And yes, it's kind of simplistic, but there is some truth in it, right? Of like, he can feel loved when you pay attention to his cock, when you want him sexually, when you're open to him sexually. Like, there's a real feeling of love. But for her to open sexually, she needs to feel loved and to feel adored and desired and cherished. And that when she feels those things, then she's feeling more ready sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can see that then we are facing a wall because she needs to feel loved in order to have sex and he needs to have sex in order to feel loved. So how they can meet?
Right. Well, the first thing is just to be aware of that difference, right? And then the second one is, can you come in a little bit towards each other? So for him, what can he do that might open her heart? Like, write love poems, take her on dates, bring her flowers, be sweet to her, give her sensual touch all day long, not just when you want penetration. but like come up and kiss her neck when she's working or caress her and then leave. Right. So it's not always, you only touch her when you want sex.
And it's a learning practice. You were talking about practice, but it's really learning practice for some men, because sometimes what they can say is like, I don't know how to do that. It's not my type of personality, or, oh, it's too much effort. Like doing all this foreplay, blah, blah, blah. You know,
it's too much. I know. I'm like, okay, well, find a woman that doesn't need that.
Yes. Yeah.
For a woman, I think too, it's like foreplay is all day. Foreplay is in general how she feels in your relationship. It's all the little kisses throughout the day. It's the sexy text. Like that is part of the erotic experience for her. And then on her side, knowing that he feels close to her through intimacy, is there sexual things she can offer to him as a love offering? Not to please him or to make him happy, but like a devotional love offering. So maybe it's like 5 minutes of cock sucking. Maybe it's dressing up in lingerie. Maybe it's, you know, self-pleasuring in front of him. Like, are there some ways she can keep stoking her own erotic fire and offer that, the warmth of that to him?
And you are working a lot with female clients, and we're talking about becoming a mom. And what kind of advice how can mother prioritize like their own sexual pleasure? Right? Because we know as women, sometimes it's very difficult for women to just think about their pleasure or to ask for what they want. And sometimes when you become a mom, for some of the women, it's like, ooh, I have my mom hat and I can't really be sexual anymore. Or who I am to enjoy my sex life now that I'm also a mom and that I need to be responsible and I want to be a model for my kids. How we can help them navigate through that?
Yeah. It's a really challenging thing, you know, because so much of motherhood is sacrifice and generosity and continually giving yourself to your children. And that's like a real experience of motherhood. And at the same time, and I think this is something that's popping up more and more with new generations, is that women don't want to give all of themselves to motherhood, that they want to still remember who they are and stay connected to their passions and their own desires and not become martyrs in motherhood. And I know when I look back at the women in my lineage, a lot of the time they gave everything to kids, their children, and felt dried up, depleted, unsexy. So what to do? I think it's to just know, first of all, that biologically you're inclined to give everything to your children. Culturally, it's encouraged to be a really selfless mother. You know, oh, you're really paying attention to yourself. Don't be selfish.
You're a great mom. Mm-hmm. You're a great mom if you, you know, if you sacrifice yourself for your kids. You are a great mom. If you don't, exactly. Wow, you are a bad mom.
Right. You're so selfish. Oh my gosh. You go to workout class every day. Oh my gosh. Right.
So selfish. And
so selfish. Yeah. So know that biology and culture is all pushing you towards selfless martyrdom. But you can counteract that if you're aware of it and deliberately carve out moments for yourself and to take a stand and say like, no, I matter. I matter. What I want matters. Me feeling good matters, because that makes me a better wife, a better lover, a better businesswoman.
A better mom even.
And just to keep... A better mom, yeah, to do things that delight you. Mm. Yeah, our midwife told me, she said, every day do something that's just for you. Like not for your baby, not for your partner, that's just for you. And I think that's great advice to mothers.
Yes. And could you give some examples? You already say some, but like for some moms who listen to us and they're like, okay, just things for me. I have no idea what I can do just for me. So let's just share some examples.
Yeah. One, I'll give some from my own life. Today I asked my partner, can you watch the baby for 30 minutes so I can do my workout class? One from the other day is I was feeling really restless being at home. And so I asked him to watch the baby so I could go to a cafe. Or when she's taking a nap, instead of just like mindlessly scrolling on Instagram, can I like call a girlfriend and have a heart to heart? Yeah, can I take a hot bath? So it's like these little things. And rather than like a formula or another to do, it's slowing down enough to tune in and listen to your body of like, what would delight me right now? And that kind of attention is what's nourishing.
Little things, but big impact, I like to say.
Yeah. What would you say? Yeah, how do you nourish yourself?
Yeah. For me, it was like, yeah, the same. Like, can you watch her while I'm taking 15 minutes, just putting music and a hot shower? Or I need to work and to really be focused. Can you go out? I need you to be out with her, you know, not in the apartment, but just be out. I want to do a family time. So it's okay. It's not only myself, but it's also nourishing myself sometimes to just have a family walk, you know, outside and we discuss and we laugh. It's really nourishing myself. Or having my breakfast on my own, you know, it's also a good thing. So doing yoga. Yeah, I think there are many examples. And when you were sharing that, I was also feeling and hearing that from some woman is like, feeling the guilt of doing it while there is so many things to do. Yeah, but there's a laundry to do. Oh, I need to prepare the meals. Oh, you know, I can't take time for myself. What do you like to answer to that?
Yeah. There is a lot to do. There's a lot to do in mothering. And to take time for yourself means sacrificing some other things you could be doing with that time, right? It might mean sacrificing having a perfectly clean house. It might mean you have to wear dirty clothes for the second day in a row. It might mean that your email inbox is never clear, right? There are like real sacrifices, but what it gives you is a felt sense that you are important. So each time you do something that delights yourself, you're reinforcing the muscle that you matter, that you and your joy are just as important, even more important than your inbox getting clean, than dishes being done. And then that builds self-worth. And it's a beautiful victorious cycle where you do something for yourself. You remember you matter. You feel good about yourself. You want to do more nice things for yourself. And it's an upward spiral versus the vicious cycle of burning out. I don't have time for myself. I don't matter. Now I'm resentful. And that's a vicious cycle.
Totally. And it's also you choose your priority. Right. Yeah. As you said, you will have to sacrifice some of the stuff, but then at the end, you choose your priority. Okay. If your priority is cleaning your house, then you choose it, but don't be resentful. It's your decision as well. Or maybe you need to ask for, you know, like having a teammate for this, or, you know, there are so many things, but choose the priority that you are the priority, that you matter as well.
Yeah. And the other one is ask for help. Gosh, they all say it takes a village to raise a child. And I think that's so true. And so many of us don't have a village around, like don't have a strong community of friends or family, but it's needed, right? Like we can't be the cook, the housekeeper, the nanny, maybe the entrepreneur. Like it's just too many roles. It is physically too many things to do on our own.
Yes. And let's not try to be superwoman. We need a team. We need a team, and it's more rewarding to have people around us helping and being there for us and feeling like, okay, we are all together in this as well. So yeah, thank you for saying that. And to finish this podcast, I wanted you to maybe like three tips. It could be something that you already shared, but like to just be concise about it, like three tips to keep the spark alive, even after having kids.
Well, one is to make time for it, to make time for romance, intimacy, moments when you both are really present and really have a chance to see each other. I think so much of the time what happens is mothers and fathers are just like ships passing in the night. Like you don't really stop and look and like, how are you doing, honey? How are you feeling? And really connect. So that's the first thing. The second thing is for mothers to have moments when she comes back to herself. Her body, her desires, her needs, and her pleasure, doing things that bring her pleasure. And then the third one is to remember to have fun with your partner. I think as a parent too, things can become so, oh, we got to clean the diapers and the laundry and to forget that to have fun and adventure, and that fun and adventure will spark out more desire and more joy with each other.
So make time for romance, come back to yourself and have fun with your partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Is there something you would like to add? A key message for people listening to this episode?
I think it's just that your relationship really matters, especially after having a baby, because now it's not just your relationship, but your relationship as the foundation of your family and as the blueprint for your child about what a relationship looks like and feels like. And so it's not just for you, but it's for your family, it's for your children. And so as hard or counterintuitive as it can be to prioritize your relationship after baby, I think it's so, so important, and you are so worth it.
Thank you. Megan, where people can find more about yourself, about your work?
Yeah, I will send you my website, but it's megandlambert.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at megandlambert. And for anyone listening, feel free to send me a note on Instagram about what you got from this episode. I love hearing from people.
Nice. Thank you. And I will add it on the short notes of the episode. Megan, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for everything you shared. And as I said, like, you know, I'm being very inspired by your work and in your personal life as well. So thank you for being you.
Oh, thank you so much. Such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.